Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is November 2nd, 2019, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Hocus Pocus for Appendicitis, and our guest skeptic is Chip Lang. He is an emergency medicine physician assistant working primarily in rural Missouri in community hospitals. He also hosts a great FOMED blog and podcast, which I encourage you to check out, called Total EM. Chip is the CEO of an ultrasound education company called Practical Pocus, which is based in the United States, but is expanding into international markets. Welcome back to the SGM, Chip.
Thanks, Ken. It's always a pleasure to be on the podcast. And actually, I got to change the topic up a little bit because a big congratulations to you for being awarded the Dr. Judith Tintinnelli Outstanding Contribution in Education Award. That's such a high honor, but you are very deserving of it, and I am excited that they chose you for the award.
Well, thank you very much. I think it validates online education, FOMED, blogs, podcasts, what you and many other people are doing at a really high level as an asynchronous way for medical education. So I was happy to accept the award. I was honored to accept the award, and it's great that it's named after the person who literally wrote the book on emergency medicine, Dr. Tintinnelli. But you know what? It's a little embarrassing too. I mean, because there's so many great people out there doing so many great things. So I was just holding up the FOMED flag for everybody to see.
Well, I know we all appreciated it. And like I said, I could not think of someone more deserving for your role, and especially for your contributions in ASAP, including working with the rules section and all the work that you do there. So I was very excited to see it. I was very happy that you received that award this year. So again, congratulations.
Thank you. But it is my podcast. You are on my show. So I'm going to cut you off and say, hey, what podcast are you up to on Total EM?
Oh, yeah. So at least at the point with the publication, we are up in the 170s because we publish content weekly still, which has been no small feat, as I know you are aware of having to try and get content out weekly. But we're up in the 170s, and I am very excited to have you back for the next special, number 200, because you get to come on every 50th podcast. Don't forget, Ken, you can come on sooner, but what do you think we should talk about for number 200?
Well, I think we should talk about using a word catheter for Barthelloid cysts, because I've got some music in my head now ever since you mentioned offline about word catheters. And I'm thinking word, word, word. Word is the word. I said a word, word, word. Or is it the word for Barthelloid cysts? So yeah, maybe we could pick a paper on that and I could come on Total EM.
That sounds fantastic.
Well, I know that we won't upset Scott Weingart if we're talking about a word catheter, probably. But the last time you were on the SGM, we touched a little nerve with Scotty Weingart.
Yeah, I'm always happy to receive feedback from posts, and he's an expert in critical care and resuscitation. I mean, that's why a lot of people listen to him, and he has fantastic content. So I wasn't upset with his feedback, and I think a lot of the feedback I would agree with him on. And the follow-up conversation that you had on your podcast where the two of you were discussing the finer points of something that we only brushed over in the original podcast that we did together on airway ultrasound, I think took care of a lot of some of the concepts and concerns, but it's always a good conversation. And I, like I said, I enjoyed listening to it. I've only got to meet Scott Weingart once before, but I understand he's very genuine. He's a very good guy. So I understand his potential concerns for it. And I'd always like to talk to him more about in the future. So, Scott, if you're listening, I'd like to talk to you some more, just to go into it a little bit more as well. But I think you guys did an awesome job covering up on a follow-up podcast about airway ultrasound. But I have to say that was very enjoyable. And I think by stirring it up a little bit like that, I think airway ultrasound got more attention than was originally planned. And I think it's well-deserved that we talk about it a little bit more.
It's always great when you have people challenge your claims and challenge your positions, because that makes you look into it deeper and have a greater understanding. And when those people do challenge your claims and what you've said, and you mentioned it was just something in our background material that we just glossed over to say, hey, there is data that suggests this. It wasn't a main focus of the podcast, but it's great to go back and look at it more carefully and more often than not, we find that most of what we know is built on evidence that's very, very weak. So it was a good experience, and I was glad to have Scott on for a conversation, and I look forward to a future one at some point. But we've got to get on with this podcast, and this podcast is again about ultrasound, but it's not about airway ultrasound. So give us a case.
Yeah, so let's build this on kind of our setting, right, Ken? So a six-year-old boy comes into your emergency department at around midnight with his parents complaining of abdominal pain. His mother reports that the symptoms began a couple of days ago and he did not eat today. Now the patient has been vomiting for the last couple of hours. Initially, he would point to the periumbilical area, but his father says that now he points to the right lower portion of his abdomen as his area of pain. You do not have an ultrasound tech available at night, and you are thinking of using your point-of-care ultrasound or POCUS skills to look for a possible appendicitis, but you are unsure how accurate this test would be, especially compared to other modalities such as a radiology-performed ultrasound.
We've reviewed papers on POCUS many times over the years on the SGEM, and this has included things like lumbar punctures, diagnosing acute abdominal aneurysms, acute heart failure, even pediatric fractures, retinal detachments, and of course, Scott, if you're listening, endotracheal tube placements.
Yeah, so ultrasound, especially in the pediatric population, has been a common form of imaging for the diagnosis of appendicitis. It avoids the concerns of radiation and contrast that we see with CT. And MRI, especially in the rural settings, it's not very practical in most situations.
However, ultrasound does have its limitations, especially in obese patients or those unable to comply with the exam for reasons such as pain. Well, what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer on today's SGEM podcast?
What is the diagnostic performance of emergency physician-performed point-of-care ultrasound, or EP POCUS, for diagnosing acute appendicitis?
And the reference?
Lee and Yoon, Diagnostic Performance of Emergency Physician-Performed Point-of-Care Ultrasonography for Acute Appendicitis, a Meta-Analysis, the American Journal of Emergency Medicine, 2019.
And let's run through the PICO. What was the population?
Patients in original research articles with right lower quadrant abdominal pain with EP POCUS performed as the index test and the use of surgical or pathological findings as the reference standard for acute appendicitis. There had to be sufficient information to reconstruct a 2x2 contingency table regarding sensitivity and specificity.
Now, there were a number of exclusions for this, and I'll put those in the show notes. What was the intervention?
EP POCUS for diagnosing acute appendicitis.
So what was the comparison?
Radiologists performed ultrasonography, or RADIS.
All right, let's go through the outcomes. What was the primary outcome?
Diagnostic parameters of EP POCUS for acute appendicitis, which is essentially sensitivity, specificity, and likelihood ratios.
All right, how about the secondary outcomes?
Subgroup analysis of pediatric patients comparing EP POCUS to RADIS.
All right, and the author's conclusions were, quote, the diagnostic performance of EP POCUS and radiologist-performed ultrasound, RADIS, were excellent for acute appendicitis, with EP POCUS having an even better performance for pediatric acute appendicitis. Accurate diagnoses may be achieved when the attending EP is the initial POCUS operator and uses a 7 mm cutoff value, end of quote. All right, let's go through the 6 quality checklist questions for systematic reviews of diagnostic studies. The first question, Chip, is the diagnostic question, is it clinically relevant with an established criterion standard?
Yes.
The search for studies was detailed and exhaustive.
No, it was an electronic search of 2 databases and limited to English language reports. While they did go through the bibliographies of identified articles, there was no other discussion of searching the gray literature.
The third question, the methodological quality of primary studies, were assessed for common forms of diagnostic research bias.
Yes, they used the QADIS-2 tool.
The fourth question, the assessment of studies was reproducible.
Yes, previous studies have used the same or similar data with similar findings.
There was low heterogeneity for the estimate of sensitivity or specificity?
No, the heterogeneity for sensitivity was 93.5 and for specificity was 89.37.
And the final question, the summary diagnostic accuracy is sufficiently precise to improve upon existing clinical decision-making models.
Unsure, Ken.
All right, let's get to those results. They identified 17 studies in their search, and that had a total of almost 2,400 patients. The mean age ranged from as low as 6 to as high as 37 years of age, and the mean proportion of male patients were 26% to 61%. What was the key result, Chip?
EP POCUS exhibited a pooled sensitivity of 84% and a pooled specificity of 91%, with a positive likelihood ratio of 7 and a negative likelihood ratio of 0.22 for diagnosing acute appendicitis.
And I'll put a table in there summarizing EP POCUS versus RADIS for sensitivity, specificity, and the positive and negative likelihood ratios. There was better diagnostic performance for pediatric acute appendicitis with a sensitivity of 95% and a specificity also of 95%.
A direct comparison revealed no statistical differences between the diagnostic performances of EP POCUS and RADIS.
And the meta-regression analyses revealed that study location, acute appendicitis proportion, and mean age were sources of heterogeneity. Higher sensitivity and specificity tended to be associated with an appendix diameter cutoff value of 7 millimeters and the emergency physician as the initial operator. Well, that's enough of the results. Let's get to one of my favorite sections, the Talk Nerdy section. We have how many things?
Well, Ken, it's your favorite number, of course. 5.
Exactly. You've done this too many times, Chip. I can't fool you. All right, I'll take number 1, and this is the wide range of cutoffs. There was a wide range of cutoffs for appendicitis, including the diameter and concurrent findings. This has helped attribute to the heterogeneity of the studies. We care about this primarily because it makes it more difficult to see if certain parameters are more beneficial for diagnostic cutoffs. However, from this particular data set, like this data set that they did here, it was the 7 millimeter cutoff for appendiceal diameter seemed to be better than the 6 millimeter cutoff used in other studies. And when I'm talking to a surgeon, I'm usually telling them, oh, it's greater than or less than 6 millimeters because that's the number they're looking for. But in this data set, the diagnostic performance worked better with a 7 millimeter cutoff.
So the second concern that we had was heterogeneity. There was a large heterogeneity as reported by the I2 metric. It was 93.5 for sensitivity and 89.37 for specificity. This will affect pooled estimates, and we will see this all with the wide confidence intervals that were present. It is reasonable to question whether or not these studies should have been meta-analyzed given the large heterogeneity. We should be skeptical of these results, especially given the data used.
Yeah, when you see heterogeneity up close to 100%, and like in this case, it was 94% for sensitivity and 89% for specificity, it really makes us wonder, should the data have been combined? Are we talking about apples and oranges here? And so that makes it harder to interpret the data when you have such high heterogeneity. But the third point is about likelihood ratios. We like to see likelihood ratio positive greater than 10 to rule in a diagnosis. And then when we're looking at likelihood ratio negative, we want it to see it less than 0.1 to rule out a diagnosis. Only RADIS had a likelihood ratio positive of greater than 10. Neither RADIS nor EP POCUS had a likelihood ratio negative of less than 0.1 to rule out acute appendicitis.
Our fourth point is regarding clinicians. Like most studies regarding POCUS, this used resident and attending physicians in academic centers and does not speak to the abilities of those of other types of clinicians, such as PAs, NPs, and those working in rural or remote environments. It would be fantastic to see future studies that address these issues specifically to see how much of an impact there is with these groups of clinicians.
And I really think that ultrasound has demonstrated that it is operator dependent, and it's not to you know, not respect the skills that different clinicians have. Because I know, Chip, you are a much better ultrasounder than I am. I mean, you have a course on it, you're quite an advocate for it, and your training involved it. My training didn't involve point of care ultrasound, so I've had to pick it up afterwards. So I think that, you know, I'm a rural physician, but just because I'm a physician and you're a PA doesn't make me better than you. And in fact, I know you're better at this than I am. So I think it's really operator dependent and not what letters do you have after your name dependent. Would you agree?
Absolutely would agree 100% on that. In fact, there has been a small amount of literature, which we're not discussing today, but there is a small amount of literature out there that has been used to help compare the performance of different types of clinicians. And it says the same thing that you're talking about. It doesn't matter what letters you have behind your name. It's your skill level and your competence in it. So I agree 100% that it will depend on the individual.
Yeah, it's individual dependent. And if you practice the skill in a proper way with good feedback, you'll become very good at it, as opposed to not having much opportunity to practice or not having much feedback, you won't be as good. So it's not the tool, it's the person holding the tool and how they use the tool that's really important. Again, not the letters they have after their name.
And if I may add one more thing to that, for those who are thinking this may be an ultrasound-specific issue, I have a question for you. Who would you rather trust with a stethoscope, an orthopedic surgeon or a cardiologist? Again, it's going to be user-dependent. So no knock to my orthopedic surgery colleagues, but I haven't seen them wear a stethoscope in a very, very long time. So again, if I'm wanting to hear about heart murmurs, for example, I'm going to go probably towards the cardiologist or at least someone who's used to using it. Doesn't have to be a cardiologist, of course, because we tend to listen to hearts quite a bit too. So, but my point is that it is going to be user dependent no matter what we use. Ultrasound is just a very classic example of that.
All right, and the fifth and final point is about pediatric patients. The evidence for EP POCUS is strongest for pediatric examinations. This may primarily be related to body habitus. The larger the patient, the harder it is to visualize abdominal organs, especially the appendix. Also, in small pediatric patients, the high-frequency linear probe is frequently used, which provides even more detailed visualization of the appendix compared to the more classically used lower-frequency curvilinear or phased array probe. That's enough tech and nerdiness for now. Let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
We think that the diagnostic accuracy of EP POCUS is good but not excellent for diagnosing acute appendicitis. It is better in pediatric populations and that the use of a 7mm cutoff appears to be more accurate.
All right, Chip, you're the expert. Give me the bottom line.
EP POCUS has the potential to diagnose acute appendicitis, especially in pediatric populations, and appears to be better at ruling in rather than ruling out acute appendicitis.
Can you resolve the case you presented?
With consent from the parents and patient, you are able to use your bedside ultrasound and find an 8mm non-compressible and aperistaltic appendix. You call the pediatric surgeon who takes the patient to the OR for further management, including appendectomy.
All right, and how about the clinical application?
POCUS continues to play an important role in emergency medicine and is being embraced more over time. We should consider using ultrasound for a variety of conditions, including the diagnosis of appendicitis. Given the issues of operator experience, study heterogeneity, and wide confidence intervals, we do not think EP POCUS should be the sole criteria in diagnosing acute appendicitis.
Well, hopefully that'll prevent some people like Scott Weingart from calling us out and saying that we only wanted to use ultrasound for a specific condition. It takes place in a clinical context, and it certainly wouldn't be the sole criteria. They've got to come in with the right story, the physical exam that matches the story, and then other information like a ultrasound that could corroborate or rule in or rule out things. So I think that was excellent. What are you going to tell the patient? But I guess in this case, it would both be the patient and their parent or caregiver.
Yeah, I would tell the parents and patient that we are going to use a special machine that uses sound waves to look into his abdomen to see his appendix, a small tube in his stomach that can become sick, and that could be what's causing his symptoms. It is a good test, but it is far from a perfect test. If I see a swollen appendix with the ultrasound machine, your son probably has appendicitis. If I do not see his appendix, we probably will need to do some more testing.
Last week's Keener Contest winner was Dr. Stephen Steltz from Auckland, New Zealand. This is a repeat win for Dr. Steltz. He knew the term that originally was used to describe a break in the fourth or fifth metacarpal was called a barroom fracture. What's the question this week?
Many people have been waiting for the Butterfly IQ to come to them. According to Butterfly Network, when will it be available for purchase to our friends in the north, aka Canada?
Oh, so I hope the butterfly is coming, i.e. in the winter, you know, like this winter. If you know the answer, when the Butterfly IQ is planned to be released in Canada, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com. The first correct answer will not receive a Butterfly IQ, but will receive a cool skeptical prize. Well, thanks, Chip, for coming back on and doing our 10th episode looking at POCUS.
I really appreciate coming back on, Ken. As always, it's a great time. I am excited to announce that we have some upcoming courses that will be in 2020, since we are talking a little bit about ultrasound. You mentioned what we do with Practical POCUS. You can get full details at practicalpocus.com, but for some of the fun courses that are coming up, we're looking at Big Sky, Montana in October of 2020. And my favorite place, the St. Louis Zoo, in June 2020.
Wait a minute. You're going to be going in and ultrasounding zoo animals?
Well, you know, maybe we won't be able to ultrasound the zoo animals, although there is the IQ vet now. So, I mean, that's always a possibility. But we wanted to have a very fun, family-friendly environment because we are hoping to make this more of a full age spectrum class. So we're going to include a lot more pediatric patients. And what better way to bring families than to go to the zoo?
Well, if you have a family, you know that it can often be like a zoo. But I thought you were going to say, ooh, I mean, it's hard enough for me to, you know, do ultrasound on human beings, let alone going, okay, what's the difference between a tiger and a giraffe and an otter? You would have lost me. I think that's the advanced course. But they sound really exciting. I'll put a link in the show notes then, so people can check out that Big Sky Montana course and, of course, your St. Louis Zoo course. But until next time, can you read the SGEM tagline, Chip?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.